Welcome to the Inner Side Radio Program, Skeptic's Delight.
Why don't you repeat that question?
Do I believe in UFOs or extraterrestrial visitors? I'm not authorized to answer that question. Where shall I begin? First, remember what the U stands for in UFO. Now, there's a fascinating frailty of the human mind that psychologists know all about. And it's called argument from ignorance. And this is how it goes. You ready? Somebody sees lights flashing in the sky. They've never seen it before. They don't understand what it is. They say, a UFO. The U stands for unidentified. So they say, I don't know what it is. It must be aliens from outer space visiting from another planet. Well, if you don't know what it is, that's where your conversation should stop. You don't then say, it must be anything. Okay? That's what argument from ignorance is. It's common. I'm not blaming anybody. Psychologists know all about it. And it may relate to our burning need to have to know stuff because we're uncomfortable steeped in ignorance. You can't be a scientist if you're uncomfortable with ignorance because we live at the boundary between what is known and unknown in the universe. Unlike what journalists write, all articles about science discoveries begin. Scientists now have to go back to the drawing board. As though we're sitting up in our office, you know, masters of the universe. It's like, oops, somebody discovered something. No, we're always at the drawing board. If you're not at the drawing board, you're not making discoveries. You're something else. So, the public, it appears, seems to have this burning need to have an answer to what is unknown. And so you go from an abject statement of ignorance to an abject statement of certainty. So, that is operating within us. Let's start there. Second, we know, not only from research in psychology, but simple empirical evidence in the history of science, that the lowest form of evidence that exists in this world is eyewitness testimony. Which is scary because that's some of the highest form of evidence in the court of law. But we know from second grade. Where's my guy from second grade? Get up to the microphone for a minute. Look, grab the microphone. In your classes, have you done the famous experiment where you play telephone and you line up all your kids in class and one person starts with a story and then you hear it and you repeat it to the next person and the next person? Have you done that in class yet?
Yes.
You've done that experiment? Because what happens by the time you get to the last person and they retell the story? What happens?
It's like completely different.
It's completely different! Completely different, okay? Because the conveyance of information was relying on eyewitness testimony, which in that case is ear witness testimony. And so, let's thank you. So we know that. So he knows it. He's in second grade.
Fascinating.
So now, it wouldn't matter if you saw a flying saucer.
Captain's log supplement.
In science, even if you have something less controversial than a flying saucer, if you come into my lab and you say, you gotta believe me, I saw it.
Irritating.
And you're one of my fellow scientists, I say, go back, go home. Go back until you have some other kind of evidence that's not just you saw it. Okay? Because human perception system is rife with all ways of getting it wrong.
Ah, yes. One of your earth emotions.
But we don't like thinking of ourselves that way. We have high opinions of our human biology when in fact we should not. We are poor data-taking devices. That's why we have such a thing as science. Because we have machines that don't care what side of the bed they woke up in the morning. Don't care what they said to their spouse that day. Doesn't care whether they had their morning caffeine. They'll get the data right, okay? So, maybe you did see visitors from another part of the galaxy. I need more than your eyewitness testimony. And in modern times, I need more than your photograph, which Photoshop probably has a UFO button today. Like, stick it in, right? I'm not saying we haven't been visited. I'm saying the evidence thus far brought forth does not satisfy the standards of evidence that any scientist would require for any other claim that you're going to walk into the lab with. So here's what I recommend. Next time you're abducted, because I'm ready for this. I'm ready. Okay?
It's a mystery.
I get abducted.
I don't like mysteries.
I'm ready. Okay? So you're there. You're like on the slab, because they always do like the sex experiments on you, on the flying saucer. So there you are, and they're poking at you.
Fascinating.
Here's what you do. You ready? You tell the alien, you're gonna be an alien for this, right? So I say, hey, look over there. And then he looks over there, you quickly like snatch something off the shelf, put it in a pocket, and then lay back. All right? Then you're done, you come back, and say, look what I got. Okay, I like stole the ashtray off the shelf of the flying saucer. And then you bring that to the lab. It's not about eyewitness testimony at that point, because you'll have something of alien manufacture. And anything you pull off of a flying saucer that crossed the galaxy is gonna be interesting, okay? Because even objects within our own culture. I got this device here, okay? The iPhone. 10 years ago, they would have resurrected the witch-burning laws had you pulled this thing out, okay? And that's in our own culture. Our own culture produced this over a 10-year span. So if there's some technology that crossed the galaxy, that's going to be some serious stuff to look at in the lab. Then we can have the conversation. Until then, I can't, I'm sorry. Go ahead, keep trying to find them. I'm not going to stop you. But get ready for that time you are abducted, because I'm going to be looking for your evidence when that happens. And well, my no, last point on that is, there are people who have looked up, who look up all the time. Like, for example, the community of amateur astronomers in the world. I was an amateur astronomer. We look up, we come out of a building, we look up. Doesn't matter, we're looking up. UFO sightings are not higher among amateur astronomers than they are in the general public. In fact, they're lower. You say, well, why is that so? Well, because we know what the hell we're looking at. We know. Do you know? I don't. Because we study this stuff. Do you know there was a UFO sighting reported by a police officer? Because we think that because you have a badge or you're a pilot or you're whatever, that your testimony is somehow better than that of an average person. It's all bad because we're human, okay? So there was a police officer who was tracking a UFO that was swaying back and forth in the sky, okay? Reported, on the hot, they're in one of the, what do you call the car? The squad car chasing a UFO, and the UFO's moving back and forth like this, okay? Later it turned out the cop car was chasing Venus, and he was driving on a curved road. But was so distracted by Venus, he thought Venus was the one moving, and he wasn't even thinking that he was doing this.
What are you here for? We're all here to go. That's what we're all here for. Earth is going to be a space station, and we are here to go into space. That's what we're here for. Do I hear any questions about that? What do you expect? Come on, tell me. I'm here. I'm here. What do you expect?
Here's the good part. The theory of evolution does not and cannot explain so much about the universe that we know. For instance, when and how did water evolve? How does it happen that gravity can hold us to the Earth and at the same time allow us to step up without any trouble?
Wow.
How did it happen that the Earth is spinning at the exact rate that keeps us from feeling that movement?
What?
I find it much easier to believe that Genesis tells us the truth of the creation when we know from God's own words that nothing is impossible for him to do.
Wow, it's the anthropic principle and
the earth spinning.
Dismal misunderstanding of creationism all rolled into one.
And gravity, don't forget gravity.
Gravity, yeah, well.
It is actually gravity that keeps us on the Earth and not the Earth's rotation.
Oh, wow.
Holy cow. And water doesn't evolve. Other than that, great letter.
That's amazing.
Carol Crooks.
What?
Well, water is chemistry, basically. And as such, evolution has nothing to say about it.
Water evolved because, well, when two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom love each other very, very much.
Actually, water evolved because early on in the Earth's evolution...
Development.
Development. When the Earth was really hot and there were tons of volcanoes all over the Earth, the steam from the volcanoes, there was so much that it actually developed water, and it rained, and the oceans developed. And that's how it developed. And that's, I learned that this year in my intro to geology class.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Of course, I'm from Seattle, so.
I haven't taken
Where did that water
that
come from?
Obviously, that's intellectual liberal propaganda they're teaching you.
Yeah, obviously.
But to make water, you got to add hydrogen and oxygen.
And that comes out of
H2O.
Well, that comes out of the volcano when it erupts. You have all those atoms together.
But you're forgetting the theory of intelligent eruption. Intelligent hydronization, something like that. I don't know. Anyway, that was short.
Yeah, but amusing.
Yes.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness. He keeps repeating himself. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Money, money, money.
This is a 9-minute beat poem. It's called Storm. Inner North London, top floor, flat, all white walls, white carpet, white cat, rice paper partitions, modern art and ambition. The host's a physician, bright bloke, has his own practice, his girlfriend's an actress, an old mate of ours from home, and they're always great fun, so to dinner we've come. The fifth guest is an unknown. The hosts have just thrown us together as a favour because his girl's just arrived from Australia and she's moved to North London and she's a sister of someone or has some connection. As we make introductions, I'm struck by her beauty. She's irrefutably fair with dark eyes and dark hair. But as she sits, I admit I'm a little bit wary because I notice the tip of the wing of a fairy tattooed on that popular area just above the derriere. And when she says, I'm Sagittarian, I confess a pigeonhole starts to form and is immediately filled with pigeon when she says her name is Storm. Conversation is initially bright and light-hearted, but it's not long before Storm gets started. You can't know anything. Knowledge is merely opinion. She opines over her Cabernet Sauvignon vis-a-vis some unhippily empirical comment made by me. Not a good start, I think. We're only on pre-dinner drinks. And across the room, my wife widens her eyes, silently begs me, be nice. A matrimonial warning not worth ignoring, so I resist the urge to ask Storm whether knowledge is so loose weave of a morning when deciding whether to leave her apartment by the front door or the window on her second floor. The food is delicious, and Storm, whilst avoiding all meat, happily sits and eats as the good doctor, slightly pissedly, holds court on some anachronistic aspect of medical history, when Storm suddenly insists, "But the human body is a mystery. Science just falls in a hole when it tries to explain the nature of the soul." My hostess throws me a glance. She, like my wife, knows there's a chance I'll be off on one of my rare but fun rants, but I shan't. My lips are sealed. I just want to enjoy the meal. And although Storm is starting to get my goat, I have no intention of rocking the boat. Although it's becoming a bit of a wrestle, because like her meteorological namesake, Storm has no such concerns for our vessel. Pharmaceutical companies are the enemy. They promote drug dependency at the cost of the natural remedies that are all our bodies need. They are immoral and driven by greed. Why take drugs when herbs can solve it? Why use chemicals when homeopathic solvents can resolve it? I think it's time we all return to live with natural medical alternatives. And try as I like, a small crack appears in my diplomacy dike. By definition, I begin, alternative medicine, I continue, has either not been proved to work or been proved not to work. Do you know what they call alternative medicine that's been proved to work? Medicine. So you don't believe in any natural remedies? On the contrary, Storm, actually, before we came to tea, I took a natural remedy derived from the bark of a willow tree. A painkiller, virtually side effect free. It's got a weird name. Darling, what was it again? Oh yeah, aspirin, which I paid about $1 for down at the local drugstore. The debate briefly abates as my hosts collect plates. But as they return with dessert, Storm pertly asserts, Shakespeare said it first. There are more things in heaven and earth than exist in your philosophy. Science is just how we're trained to look at reality. It doesn't explain love or spirituality. How does science explain psychics, auras, the afterlife, the power of prayer? I'm becoming aware that I'm staring. I'm like a rabbit suddenly trapped in the blinding headlights of vacuous crap. Maybe it's the Hamlet she just misquaffed, or the sixth glass of wine I just quaffed, but my diplomacy diet groans can be held back no more. Storm, sorry, I don't mean to bore ya, but there's no such thing as an aura. Reading auras is like reading minds, or tea leaves, or star signs, or meridian lines. These people aren't playing a skill. They're either lying or mentally ill. Same goes for people who claim to hear God's demands and spiritual healers who think they've got magic hands. By the way, why do we think it's okay for people to pretend they can talk to the dead? Isn't that totally f***ed in the head? Lying to some crying woman whose child has died and telling her you're in touch with the other side? I think that's fundamentally sick. Do we need to clarify here that there's no such thing as a psychic? What are we f***ing to? Do we actually think that Horton heard a who? Do we still believe that Santa brings us gifts, that Michael Jackson didn't have facelifts? Are we still so stunned by circus tricks that we think the dead would want to talk to pricks like John Edward? Storm, to her credit, despite my derision, keeps firing off cliches with startling precision, like a sniper using bollocks for ammunition. You're so sure of your position, but you're disclosed-minded. I think you'll find that your faith in science and tests is just as blind as the faith of any fundamentalist. Well, that's a good point. Let me think for a bit. Oh, wait, my mistake. That's absolute bullshit. Science adjusts its views based on what's observed. Faith is the denial of observation so that belief can be preserved. If you show me that, say, homeopathy works, then I will change my mind. I will spin on a dime. I'll be as embarrassed as hell, but I will run through the streets yelling, "It's a miracle! Take physics and bin it! Water has memory, and whilst its memory of a long-lost drop of onion juice seems infinite, it somehow forgets all the poo it's had in it." You show me that it works and how it works, and when I've recovered from the shock, I will take a compass and carve fancy that on the side of my cock. Everyone's just staring now, but I'm pretty pissed and I've dug this far down, so I figure, in for the penny, in for the pound. Life is full of mystery, yeah. But there are answers out there, and they won't be found by people sitting around looking serious and saying, isn't life mysterious? Let's sit here and hope. Let's call up the Pope. Let's go watch Oprah interview Deepak Chopra. If you must watch telly, you should watch Scooby-Doo. That show was so cool because every time there was a church with a ghoul or a ghost in a school, they looked beneath the mask, and what was inside? The janitor or the dude who ran the water slide. Because throughout history, every mystery ever solved has turned out to be not magic. Does the idea that there might be knowledge frighten you? Does the idea that one afternoon on Wikipedia might enlighten you frighten you? Does the notion that there might not be a supernatural so blow your hippie noodle that you'd rather just stand in the fog of your inability to Google? Isn't this enough? Just this world? Just this? Beautiful, complex, wonderfully unfathomable natural world? How does it so fail to hold our attention that we have to diminish it with the invention of cheap man-made myths and monsters? If you're so into your Shakespeare, lend me your ear. To gild refined gold, to paint the lily, to throw perfume on the violet, or something like that. What about Satchmo?
I'll see trees of green, red roses too.
And fine, if you wish to glorify Krishna and Vishnu in a post-colonial, condescending, bottled up and labeled kind of way, then whatever, that's okay. But here's what gives me a hard on. I am a tiny, insignificant, ignorant bit of carbon. I have one life, and it is short and unimportant. But thanks to recent scientific advances, I get to live twice as long as my great-great-great-great uncles and aunties. Twice as long to live this life of mine. Twice as long to love this wife of mine. Twice as many years of friends and wine, of sharing curries and getting shitty at good-looking hippies with fairies on their spines and butterflies on their titties. And if perchance I have offended, think but this and all is mended. We'd as well be 10 minutes back in time for all the chance you'll change your mind.
Human rights, or universal human rights, actually exist. To me, the question isn't whether this is, you know, we know that the concept exists. Human rights exist as long as we, as a society, say they exist.
Right.
As long as we are, you know, generally come together and saying, you have these rights, that's what gives you those rights.
It's a societal construct.
Yeah. It's not that we keep discovering human rights, it's that we keep developing new sentiments towards people. And
right.
So this, like, bubble that we have, we just keep extending it to more and more people. Like, yeah, well, hey, you deserve that right, too.
When we finally provide full rights to homosexuals with regard to marriage and everything, it won't be the discovery of a new human right. It'll be the implementation or the extension of a current right onto other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, of course, the whole question becomes, how far do you want that to go? Because I always bring up my sister Karen, who's a vegan and thinks that rights should extend to clams.
Now, well, this dovetails into my next story. According to a study in the University of Minneapolis,
yes,
atheists are identified as America's most distrusted minority. America's increasing acceptance of religious diversity doesn't extend to those who don't believe in a God, according to a national survey by researchers in the University of Minnesota's Department of Sociology. From a telephone sampling of more than 2,000 households, university researchers found that Americans rate atheists below Muslims, recent immigrants, gays and lesbians, and other minority groups in sharing their vision of American society. Atheists are also the minority group most Americans are least willing to allow their children to marry.
Now, I would agree with him on one point. I definitely don't share their vision for American society.
Most likely.
What vision is that?
theocracy.
Yeah,
a Christian nation with Ten Commandments monuments on every corner.
Thanks for reminding me.
Even though atheists are few in number, not formally organized, and relatively hard to publicly identify, they are seen as a threat to the American way of life by a large portion of the American public. Atheists, who count for about, well, according to this, 3% of the U.S. population, I've heard numbers much larger than that, offer a glaring exception to the rule of increasing social tolerance over the last 30 years, says Penny Edgell, the study's lead researcher. Edgell also argues that today's atheists play the role that Catholic Jews and communists have played in the past. They offer a symbolic moral boundary to membership in American society. It seems most Americans believe that diversity is fine as long as everyone shares a common core of values that makes them trustworthy. And in America, that core has historically been religious. The researchers also found acceptance or rejection of atheists is related not only to personal religiosity, but also one's exposure to diversity, education, and political orientation. With more educated East and West Coast Americans more accepting of atheists than their Midwestern counterparts.
I love that you guys are just the most untrusted people in America.
And that's why we don't have a political voice. When we vote, we have to vote for the Christian or the Christian. That's it. Those are the choices we have, and we have to trust that.
There's a problem, which is if you hear two people who both have faith, how do you decide which one is right?
Mm-hmm.
You
know, what's an outside observer to do?
At some point, you've got to decide what to have faith in.
Well, you guys have faith. You believe very strongly that there is no God,
you know?
And
No.
Okay, so tell me. What was wrong with what I said?
You said we believe very strongly that there is no God.
And we don't.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually something that we talked about in one of our classes.
No, I lack a belief in God.
Well, that's actually something that we talked a lot about, is saying that, like, atheists are very ironic people because they spend their whole life arguing against a God, and in that sense, God actually plays a heavy role in their life.
No, the believers play a big role in our life. The God doesn't enter into it.
We're arguing against...
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
We're arguing against a concept and ideas and claims.
There's
a fundamental difference between saying, I believe that no God exists, and I don't believe that a God exists. There is a fundamental difference between the two. There are people, emotional atheists. There are people who get mad at the concept of God, or get mad at the God that they believed in, or mad at family, and they say, oh, I just don't believe, and I'm an atheist. And that tends to be the straw man example that people
use. Whereas what we've been talking about throughout the show is not so much getting mad about what God does or doesn't do, but about what stupid people are doing in his name.
Well, that's a really interesting point, is that the conflicts about atheism and theism don't really have anything to do with God. They're about the followers themselves.
So. Not believing in something is not the same as believing the opposite of that thing.
Yeah.
Like, not playing baseball is not a sport. You know, it's...
Bald isn't a hair color.
Bald isn't a hair color.
Matt's dad in his email said that Matt was now preaching for Satan.
Yeah.
Now, until I just said it, did we mention Satan?
Now, the reason I call default atheism default atheism...
This has been the Innerside Radio program, Skeptic's Delight. We open with Neil deGrasse Tyson's take on ufology, William Burroughs, Tim Minchin's beat poem, Storm, selections from Nonprofit Radio with Dennis LeBay, Russell Glasser, Matt Dillahunty, and Emerald sitting in, music and sound from CyberZen Sound Engine. This and all Innerside Radio programs are archived on the internets. Simply Google The Innerside. My name is Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.